Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, name 828, is Ashvata, which students of Bhagavad Gita at least know to be meaning banyan. However, Parashara Bhata gives another meaning. Shva means, well, one meaning is dog, but another meaning is tomorrow. So here we have a, not, shva, tomorrow, sta, fixed. So what does that mean? Put it all together. Not fixed in one day, just for tomorrow. Do you ever have that experience, those of you who learned any language? You're reading and you can understand all the words in the sentence, but you can't understand the sentence. You can't understand how it all fits together. So what it means is not fixed just for tomorrow. In comparison to the demigods, whose position is impermanent. There you go. The demigods, they're called Amara, which means they don't die. I remember seeing shortly after Rajiv Gandhi was, if you've ever heard of him, why should shortly after he was assassinated, Prime Minister of, or aspiring Prime Minister of India at the time, and I saw a big poster. Rajiv Gandhi Amarahe means he doesn't die, he'll live forever. And that they say, don't they? They'll live forever. I remember the Kargil heroes. Anyone here ever heard of Kargil? You haven't heard of Kargil? It was such a big thing. How long ago was that? More than 20 years. 23 years ago, when Pakistani troops intruded into an area of Kashmir called Kargil. And with, because it was a natural fortress there, it was high land. So with great difficulty, Indian soldiers repelled them and pushed them out. And then they also said the same thing. The Kargil heroes will never be forgotten. And you've never even heard of them. They won't be forgotten because they won't even be remembered. We have Srila Prabhupada's opening words in dedication as Srimad Bhagavatam, dedicated to His Divine Grace, Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajaka Acharya Ashtotara Sadasri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. He lives forever by his divine instructions, and the follower lives with him. So that's real deathlessness, a real living forever. Otherwise, even if you are remembered, so what? If a foolish person is remembered by other foolish people, then what's the great thing? Demigods are called Amara, undying, but the only thing which is really durable, stable, continuous, perpetual and eternal is the Supreme Lord and all the jivas in their original position. Not knowing that or not recognizing that, we ascribe immortality to that which is mortal, plainly mortal. But in that we can find a hint of the natural desire for immortality, because we are immortal by nature and death is unnatural. Sometimes when we're speaking to people and we say, well, birth, death, old age and disease, and all these things are natural. I say, no, it's not natural. And what do you mean it's not natural? It's not natural. You're not meant to be old, to die, to be diseased, and to be born again. We're not meant for all that. But we take it as natural because we accept asatyare satta karyamani. We accept that which is untrue and unreal to be real. So this is a very important understanding. He is the one who is actually continuous. How is there any sense of continuum? If everything is just all chemicals, and we're just chemical automatons moving around, that's a symptom of consciousness, right? How is it that we perceive time at all? What is time anyway? Who can explain what is time? Why does it only go forward and not backwards? Why does it always move at the same speed? Although sometimes if we're enjoying ourselves, it seems to go much faster. And if we're, that's the nature of this world, it's a place of suffering. So when we're suffering, it spreads out more and more and more. Why is that? And then the one Buddhist theory of that nothing is really there, but appears to be there, but it's just moment by moment. Each moment is different, and there appears to be a continuum, but actually one nanosecond, from nanosecond to nanosecond, there's no actual continuity. It's a really strange theory. But the sense of continuity that comes from Brahma, Brahman, the underlying principle of everything. So time is Krishna, which is eternal, the eternality underlying that which we take to be eternal and real. We take our life to be real, although it's just a flash in eternity. We take dreams to be unreal because they're short, but our whole so-called life, it's just like a dream in as much as it begins and finishes all in a short time. But in human life we can hear about all these things and understand that we are eternal, but we are in the atmosphere of illusion in which we take that which is not eternal, not real, to be eternal and real. So all this we can extract from just this one consideration. We have in the beginning of Gita also, na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. That which is real, or first of all, that which is unreal, will not endure, and that which is real will always continue to exist. It's just two lines, but it gives a completely different perspective on life to that which you'll ever get in any school or university or from your grandmother or from a TV show. You won't get it. Even you'll have TV Mahabharata. But I don't know, I never watched it, but I presume they don't get into such depths of understanding. Parashabhata, to support this interpretation of the name, gives reference from Vishnu Purana, Murtim Rajo Mayim Brahmim Ashrita Shrijati Prajaha Ashricha Paurushim Murtim Satvikim Yah Sapalayan Kala Kyam Tamasim Murtim Ashricha Grasate Jagat. The Supreme Lord resides within the body of Brahma, principle demigod, who is composed of Rajoguna. And in this way, he creates the world. As Vishnu, he is Sattvaguna. He is fully Sattvic, and he protects the world. And taking the form of Kala, yeah, I said Kala is Vishnu, but Kala is also very much related with Shiva, Mahakal. Everyone in Madhya Pradesh has heard of Mahakal, the Jyotirlinga at Ujjain, Avanti, where Krishna went to school. They're very much aware. Kal is also a term used for death. So here it says, Kala Kyam. Who is known as Kala? Means Shiva. Assuming the body of Kala, composed of Tamoguna, he literally swallows the word Grasata, he swallows the universe. So in this way, the Supreme Lord, he enters all the various demigods and oversees them. In Gita also, Krishna, what is that? Srila Prabhupada's translation, I'm the underlying principle of all the demigods. So a quote also from Namarlava's Turuvai Muli. The lower deities, who we, foolish people, are inclined to worship to get different worldly benefits, they're like tax collectors. In other words, they take, for those who don't have a direct connection with Krishna, or this analogy is given of tax collectors, they're like tax collectors who take the worship and offer it to Krishna. But actually it's better to worship him directly. They, the demigods, have been established in their positions by the Lord, who is the Daivanayaka, the chief of all the gods. Then, Shankaracharya, one of his references, it's an obvious one. He quotes from Gita, Urdvamula Madah Shakam Ashvatam. Hear the word Ashvata. Ashvatam Prahur Avyayam Chandangsi Yasya Parnani Yastang Veda Saveda Vit. They speak of, it is spoken, this material world is spoken of as an eternal banyan tree. It's spoken of. It's not actually, but it appears to be like that. And even you see banyan trees, they can live for hundreds of years. Srila Prabhupada in one purport, what is that Bhagavatam verse? Do the trees not live? Taravo kim na jivanti. Do the trees not live? And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that in the Calcutta Botanical Gardens, there's a banyan tree which has stood there for hundreds of years. It's not there now. It got hit by a cyclone, what you call a hurricane over here. Everything in this world has to come to an end. But it seems to be, because during the lockdown, part of the lockdown, I was staying in one of our farm communities in Tamil Nadu, and on the property that we purchased was I didn't hear it fallen down in the meantime, an old tamarind tree. You can see there was a man living just close by. He was about 90 years old. And he said when he was a child, he lived in the same place all his life. Anyone in America does that? I don't think so. Dibuj Prabhu. No. He wasn't born here. He didn't live here in his childhood. Maybe that's what we should see. That would be the success of our farm communities. If kids are born here and live all their life here. So he said that when he was a child, he used to play in the area and the tree looked the same at the same time. It looked like an old tamarind tree at the time. And it gives so much fruit several harvests that is more than enough for the whole village. Much, I mean, they use a lot of tamarind down there. It's tamarind country. So it seems something eternal. There's a book which I didn't read, but I read the outline of it, called The Mill on the Floss by George Eliot. And I was thinking, well, this is getting mundane, but it's to demonstrate a point. George Eliot, who was actually a female who took that pseudonym, about the beginning of the Industrial Revolution in Britain. And the central or major part of the story is someone grew up in a village, and a nice village, everything pristine, pastoral, and after some years came back and there's a mill there, and mills in those days, another British English writer, that William Blake, he spoke about the hellish mills. They didn't have safety regulations or any such thing in those days. And so it's like a factory. And you see, he came back to the village and thinking, oh, it'll be so nice, and it's all the same, and you just expect, and completely shocked by seeing there's a mill and industries, and we just presume it's all going to be the same. People like to preserve old buildings, right? In America, the oldest building's going to be, what, 200 years old? Something like that. 400. But that means prior to the civilization, is it? Pre-civilization, before the Spanish, was it? Spanish, Portuguese, whatever. Christopher Columbus was? He was an Italian, but he was deputed by the Spanish. Okay. Excuse my ignorance of. He was never on the mainland. Only got as far as where? Long Island? Oh, really? See, I see. Having a history class here. So they like to preserve old buildings. Why? Why do you want to preserve old buildings? There's so many buildings in Europe, piles of stones, old castles, useless for any functional purpose. They're good tourist attractions, some of them. But you can't live in them, you can't use them. Why do they want to preserve them? Money, but why should there be money from a pile of stones? Business, well, that's just another way of saying money.
It's a cultural experience.
Well, the point I'm getting at is that it gives the idea of continuity, that it feels like that we're part of something bigger and older. But in course of time, everything will change. Everything will be destroyed. But we have a feeling, our cultural heritage, we have to preserve it. Right? Why? No, we are connected to the culture which is actually eternal. And that's getting a little political and controversial. I've been here 3 days. I have been a good boy up to now. But there is an idea that Vedic culture or Indian culture is just the same as any other culture. Right? And therefore you can have Krishna consciousness with Western culture. Ever heard that before? It doesn't matter. It's all the same. It's just a different kind. Actually, Western culture is the best. That's what everyone thinks. Our culture is the best. This country is the best country, obviously, because I was born in it. So there's this idea, it's just another culture. First of all, there was a big bang, and then there was a big soup, and then there was big, little cells floating around in this, and then they jumped out of the water onto the newly formed land and gradually formed themselves into lizards, and then what came next? Dogs, cats, monkeys, and then Charles Darwin, and various cultures came about, and it's all evolved. And so they're all evolved cultures. So Vedic culture, it's just another culture. So why should we go by that when, after all, the Indians, even up to the present day, are completely uncivilized, not like us Americans who know what's best for the world, and therefore we have to go and bomb them to prove that they should be doing what we're doing. They don't bomb us. We won't allow them. So this idea that we're part of a greater continuity. Yes, I'm proud to be American. Do, 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 do. Yeah, it's all nonsense. It's all nonsense. But people take it so seriously. If you were to burn an American flag around here, you'd probably get literally shot dead. Not necessarily, but you run a serious risk of it, right? If you burn the Confederate flag, yeah. Oh, if you burn the American flag, okay, sorry.
You just have to burn the Confederate flag in an African-American neighborhood.
Wait a minute, we're going to have an argument here, and we'll have a civil war right here. So the idea, continuity, we trace our genealogical table back to a village in Ireland. That's what all the American presidents do before they go to visit Ireland, and they go to show, yes, I also have roots in Ireland. So what? this feeling that we want, of course we have in the respectable families in India, they trace their lineage back to Brahma and to various rishis. But they're connected to people of real substance in that case. You can take pride in that. One devotee is telling me that, he's connected to Davy Crockett. And that's, if you want to join the military in America and you just, I'm a descendant of Davy Crockett, then immediately you're a big guy. So this idea, continuity. But it's not. The Buddhists are more correct in that regard, that there's no continuity. It's an illusory continuity. But there is a real continuity. This is being pointed out, that when we say ashvata, oh, actually, to give this meaning, you have to spell ashvata slightly differently. Then you have to spell it with one t and not two t's. But this idea that we are part of a greater continuity, it's correct, but it's misplaced. And that misplacing of it causes us to continue to be born and die again and again and again. So it's very important to understand these meanings. Yeah, Shankaracharya, he gives this meaning, that urdhvamulam, the root is up and the branches are down, the banyan tree. Its leaves are the Vedas. And who knows this, knows the Vedas. So this is the banyan tree of the material world. Prahuravyayam, they say it's eternal. So that's why I went off on that tangent, because some examples of how people, they say, they presume it's eternal. Or it just goes on and on and on. And we, but the real thing which is eternal is Brahman. And because everything in this world is rooted in Brahman, it comes from Brahma, as we were saying yesterday. Yato va imani bhutani jayante. That Brahma is that from which everything comes. Yena jatani jivanti, in which everything exists. Yat prayatyabhi sangvishanti, by which everything again enters into. That is Brahman, which is eternal. So the knowledge of the Vedas gives both the karmya karmas, or the things that people can do to fulfill their material desires, which perpetuate our cycle in birth and death, and also gives the knowledge of how to become free from this tree of material existence. That we have to do, Drudhena Chitva, Asanga Shastrena Drudhena Chitva. How can we get free from this? It's like a little jungle in itself, a banyan tree, but how do you get free from it? You have to, by the sword of non-attachment, one has to firmly cut it down. That's the way. Satyadeva Vashishta gives, also based on the idea of Shva as tomorrow, gives the understanding that Shva means tomorrow, represents time. Tishtati iti Shvataha. So he who is not constrained by time, and that's why he's called Sanatana. We're not actually constrained. Time destroys everything. No, that it destroys everything if we don't understand that we are eternal. Satyadeva Vashishta quotes from Kathopanishad, similar to the Gita verse. We'll find in the Gita and Bhagavatam so many verses which are similar to verses in the Vedas. Urdva mulo vak shaka esho shvata sanatanaha. There we have ashvataha sanatanaha. So urdva mulo vak shakha esho shvata sanatanaha tadeva shukram tad brahma tadeva amrita muchate. This is actually people tree. We're saying banyan, but it's... Srila Prabhupada translates ashvata as banyan, but people. People tree has its root above and its branches downward. It is effulgent, that is Brahman, that alone is immortal. In Gita, ashvata sarva vriksharanam, among all the trees, Krishna says, in describing his opulences as can be perceived in the material world, Krishna says, ashvata sava vriksharanam. Among all the trees, I am the ashvata. So Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, says that the banyan tree, ashvata, is one of the highest and most beautiful trees, and people in India often worship it as one of their daily morning rituals, as you may have seen. I used to see in the old part of Calcutta, if you go there, you'll see the tree growing and it's jutting out into the road, and in the road's completely packed, but still it's like the cow. If a cow sits down in the road, then it used to be, they no one would get the cow up, even if it causes traffic jams and everything. So the banyan tree is jutting into the road and people come daily and tie strings around it, and so they're thousands, and they're just covered in strings and the branches and everything. It used to be that no one would cut such a tree, but nowadays they do, because everything is declining. Ficus religiosa. That's the Latin name. And it seems like it's immortal if we compare to the human life, because the trees live much longer. But then Srila Prabhupada quotes on that Taravo King Najivanti, do the trees not live? And in the purport, he compares the tree that may live hundreds of years. Redwood trees, they can live for centuries, right? 1,000 years. They're supposed to be the oldest living known on this planet. They can live out to 1,000 years. But Srila Prabhupada said, well, what's the use? Well, it's actually a punishment to have to stand there for so long. And then he gives the example of Shankaracharya only lived 32 years, but what is his life? What is his contribution? In the meantime, the same tree is giving shelter and the the kids that play under it, and then later their kids play under it, and then later their kids play under it, and it goes on generation after generation. So it seems like that. And it just goes on and on and on like that. In this way, the tree stands as if aloof. It's so like that. Krishna is eternal, and he sees everything is going on in this. Everything is going on, and he's just aloof. Sees it, but doesn't get involved. Baladev Vidyabhushan gives the meaning, a similar meaning. He owns the material manifestation, and it is eternally controlled by him. And in this way, he links it with the previous name, Nirgrodhombura, which also gives the sense of the banyan of people that. But it also gives the sense which Baladev gives here that Ashvata means he's the controller of all moving and non-moving beings. He gives happiness to his devotees and tortures and destroys the enemies of his devotees very easily. He gives this understanding that he eternally rules over the universe, and the universe is never the same. It keeps constantly changing, but he is the same all the time. Satyadeva Vashishta, in another of his interpretations, again, he's usually links the names with facets and features of this material world and how Lord Vishnu is overseeing that. So he derives the meaning from to his pervasiveness. Lord Vishnu pervades the entire universe as the Mahabhuta, the five great elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So he is them in one sense, and he sustains them and maintains them. And in this way, he maintains the universe. Another meaning, Ashva. What does Ashva mean?
Horse.
So there you have horse avatar. Ashva sta. He stands or is situated as a horse. So that's another meaning. Hayagriva avatar. All right, that was a relatively short one. I could have maybe done two, but I didn't. So, Hare Krishna. You had some questions from yesterday?
I asked you the questions when we were walking.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I always hear we're not supposed to take our own interpretation or interpret the Vedas. So why is it that all these different commentators are almost breaking the names apart and coming
Well, we're not.
Up with
we're
them?
Not supposed to, but they can do. We are we, and they are they.
So they're renowned as pure devotees.
Yeah, they have authority to do so. And also, when these authorities, they do so by grammatical analysis, not just by their imagination, according to the fixed rules of grammar. And they give every time they give a quote from Shastra to support their position.
I heard you say that.
So it's not just abject imagination.
Okay, and all the conclusions are true. There is higher grieve.
There is higher grieve, yeah.
And then, the banyan.
Sometimes the interpretations come out with a wrong siddhanta. That can also be, because just like Krishna says to Arjuna in Bhagavad-gita, Bhakto sime sakha cheti rahasyam hiyetadu. I'm speaking this to you because you're my devotee as well as my friend. So people may, with grammatical ability, they can interpret Bhagavad-gita and come up with the wrong conclusion, but Bhagavad-gita is not meant for them.
Gotcha.
if one's motive is to glorify the Supreme Lord and is authorized by previous acharyas, then he can do so. Otherwise, it could be very dangerous. Krishna means black. Black means unknown. Therefore, no one can know Krishna. So don't bother. How about that? Krishna means black, right? Black means unknown, right? So Krishna can't be known. But it's wrong derivation. Why is it wrong? It sounds right, sounds logical, right? But then you have to go to Shastra. Vedaisha sarvera hameva vedyaha. By all the Vedas I am to be known, Krishna says. So why should someone come up with a so-called conclusion which goes against the teachings of Shastra? Then it can't be accepted. Anything else?
Maharaj, I was wondering, the law of conservation, would that be an example of the continuity you're talking about?
The law of conservation, as observed by Dr. Frog. In so-called science, there are so many presumptions. They presume that what we observe here on this tiny little planet, according to our very limited intelligence and sensual ability, must be true everywhere throughout the universe. But why should it be? Why? There's no scientific or any other reason why the laws, what they call the laws of nature, should operate everywhere just because we see them operating in such and such a way. And so far we haven't found anything to disprove that. And if we do find something to disprove it, we won't accept it anyway. Because we have to keep the law, right?
Yeah.
Everyone should follow the law. So if we make a law and we find something in science which goes against it, then it can't be right. Because it's the law. Nothing can travel faster than the speed of light.
Does thought go faster?
Definitely. Pantas tu koti shatavat sarasambragangyo vayoratapi manaso munipungavanam sopyasti yatpabhada sinya vinchit tatve govindavadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Well, that's even faster than the speed of mind. Because the mind can't reach up to achintya tatva, that which is beyond conception. So the mind can't go there. Avang manasa gocharaha, is beyond words and the mind. So the law of conservation, yeah? Who's overseeing the laws? We're not saying there aren't any scientific laws, just that they might not be what they think they are, what we think they are, and Krishna makes the laws, and he can break the laws also, as he likes. What's the ultimate law of conservation? Well, that Krishna is preserving everything. What is gravity? Who can say? What do the scientists say?
What goes up must go down.
All right, that's an observation.
Based on the mass of an object.
That's what they say, but then they don't know what it is. There's no scientific law that can define gravity. They've postulated there are things called gravitons, which they can't. Why does it do that? They can't explain. Prabhupada says it's Balaram. That's okay. Sankarshan. He He attracts everything. And you might find some scientific law. They might do. They've been trying for a long time, trying to find something. They said, right, that Newton brought that up, by centrifugal force and all this kind of thing. But then the thing is, when they find out something doesn't work in science, and they have to come up with a new theory, and when they make a new theory, a lot of the old, it's like taking medicine. It kills the disease and it kills the antibodies also. So it's like they find out a new scientific discovery, which explains one thing, but it throws the other theories which they think work, it throws them out too. And then they get in more and more trouble, and then they have to invent new things and try and prove them to be true and spend billions of dollars doing that. Trying to find out subatomic particles, which aren't particles anyway. And it goes on and on. They discovered the God particle, right? This proves there's no God.
Sure. I think that proved there was a God. The God particle.
Well, that's because you read Prabhupada's books. But in there, what they want to show is that there's nothing beyond matter. So this God, so-called God particle, if the particle's God, then we don't need God, right? We don't need someone sitting up on a cloud.
Hmm. Yeah, it never dawned on me that's what they were saying. I didn't even realize that. I didn't, pay that much attention to it. I thought, they're realizing there's a super soul somewhere.
Oh. No. It's an unspoken... a convention within science. You can't bring anything metaphysical. Not allowed. So anything else, Hare Krishna? Yeah.
Yes, I'd just like to add, please. The reason I asked was because Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita the material nature is divine, so I'm thinking it's going in cycles eternally. So is that continuity?
Well, in that sense, it's the material nature is eternal and non-eternal. Eternal in as much as it's manifest, unmanifest, manifest, unmanifest. But it goes through periods of non-existence, practically. Or the word Krishna used in Gita is avyakta. Non-manifest. So in that sense, it's... And the manifestations that are formed, that's in the 1972 edition of Bhagavad Gita, material nature is endlessly mutable. It's always changing.
I think Mother Narada Priya clarified my question. My question was that isn't the law of conservation that neither matter or energy can ever be destroyed?
Well, in that sense, but then, it becomes unmanifested in as much as the five elements and three subtle elements, they cease to exist, right, during Mahavishnu's breathing in period. So in that sense, they can be said to exist in a subtle form. And everything that is produced from these elements, it doesn't remain. Nothing will remain. All things must pass.
Earlier you mentioned something about the Vedic culture, and that is, versus, say, the American culture, which there is no American culture, but Bhaktivinoda, my understanding is Bhaktivinoda Thakur said it was acceptable when preaching to use other types of cultural music or instruments that aren't used in a temple. Is that correct?
I'm not aware of that particular quote, but it's quite likely impossible, and certainly our own Srila Prabhupada said that.
Yeah, I thought I heard.
But for the temple and for our own internal,
right.
Both Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktivinoda Thakur were much more.
So there's no
cautious
argument.
In this regard.
There's no argument.
For preaching, you can do anything. That's a quote from Prabhupada. But then the next line, but don't take it like that. Don't take a license to do anything.
Okay. I mean, because isn't,
be careful. And then there's a saying that Prabhupada used to quote was Bengali saying, when you go to fish, don't get pulled in the water when you go to catch right. fish.
Yeah, well, Prabhupada said that too. He said, I know the art of without getting wet. You know, sometimes you can tell little lies in book distribution or something. He said, but you have to know the art, how to do it without getting. And use the example of fishing, something like that.
These are all complex issues because where exactly do you draw the line?
Right.
And when you're preaching to someone or selling a book, you never know how they're going to react. You can't say. You could be very heavy with someone, it could change their life in a second and bring them to Krishna, but they might go away completely also. So,
how much has Vedic culture from the time of Krishna become perverted by the conquest in India primarily? And also from the time of Lord Chaitanya, how much has Muslim culture and British culture, you know,
well, in
so
a book
many
I compiled called A Message to the Youth of India, with quotes from Srila Prabhupada, I listed so many reasons why India's culture is degrading. And colonial influence is one of them. Mm-hmm. But a major reason is also Mayavad.
Hmm.
And just the influence of Kali Yuga.
Television.
Yeah. Modernity, all these things.
Mm. Christianity as well. I've met young men who are so heavily influenced by Christian missionaries. They thought that America was, because we're Christians, if they described it like heaven, there's no poverty here, there's no crime here. I've had conversations like that in Calcutta, another time at Juba Beach. And I thought I was blaspheming America by saying, no, there's crime, there's poverty. You know, even Prabhupada said that, he was surprised.
Yeah, some idea that America's just like heaven, there's no crime, there's no poverty, and therefore their religion must be best. The fact that so many Americans are not Christians, or they talk about, there's a common term now, post-Christian Europe.
Hmm.
It's accepted that it's in the post-Christian era. It used to be called Christendom, right? There was a term Christendom, which meant Europe and the America, the Americas, the places where Christianity was predominant, or even before that, that was Europe, even before the colonial times. It was Europe as compared to the Muslim world. Mm-hmm. But that's over. That's over now. America's much more religious and Christian, as you probably know, than is Europe.
I saw a survey that France was one of the most atheistic.
Yeah, it has been since the French Revolution. They were ahead of their times.
Israel is a majority of people, more than 50%. Are supposed to be a Jewish state.
And then you get the, we're getting into a sociological discussion. People who are cultural Christians, they don't want to be Christians, but they don't want Europe to be overrun with Muslims. So they're cultural Christians, means it's a stand against the Islamization of
Europe.
Of Europe, yeah. Londonistan and all this, they call it.
So, I mean, Israel has a point, and so do a lot of Muslim countries, and so does Japan. that as soon as you let so many immigrants in, then you sort of lose the culture that's there. And to some extent in India, where is there a safe place for Hindus? There's a safe place for Jews in Israel. But in India, you know, you have a constant, you know, battle between Christians and Muslims, and where is a safe place for Sanatana Dharma, or what's commonly called Hinduism?
On the other hand, I'm mostly in India, I'm also cautious about getting too much into the Hindutva consciousness, which I would say probably most of our ISKCON devotees in India are also influenced by that. But it's not a Vaishnav narrative or even a particularly religious narrative. It's nationalistic, anti-Muslim, anti-Christian, and build up the nation.
Why is it that the Parsis and...
Big question.
They came from the outside, Persians. They amalgamated and lived there harmoniously.
Lived harmoniously, not amalgamated, because they marry among themselves only. Well, when they came, they were told that you can stay. They were allowed to stay in what's now South Gujarat. But you can stay, but don't propagate. And they stuck to that. And they're very... prosperous community. Tata is the most, it's a house, maybe you heard Tata, the biggest business house, family biggest house, business house in India. Tata, everything, Tata trucks, Tata salt, Tata internet, everything. So they didn't disturb the status quo, they stuck to that. They appear to be a dying community also. Yeah. Anyway, that's enough. Social question. Then there's another question.
I was just going to say that it seems like the demons know Bhagavad Gita very well, because right there in chapter 1, Arjuna reveals the formula for continuity in his explanation that when the family units are destroyed, then the men get killed in the battle, the women are unprotected, they get polluted by, you know, bad men, and then unwanted progeny, irreligion, etc. It all goes downhill. So, you know, we have all this religion against religion A against religion B, and nation A against nation B, but it's all just the divide and rule thing. But it seems like the demons really, you know, knocked over the first domino when they propagated the idea that we should destroy families. I mean, covertly propagated the idea that we should destroy the family units, and therefore Varnashram can't happen. We can't even have sustainable farms, because if they're not intergenerational, it just seems like it all boils down to the family units.
Cultural Marxism.
And that's, every culture in the world needs families. It's not one culture is better than another culture, better than another nation or another religion. It's, you know.
Good point. Religion is within this world. It's synonymous. The social structure is synonymous with family. And of course, in most religions, there's also renunciance. Not in Islam, but the renunciation is there, but the unit of society is the family. And we see just until recently, the people who are meat eaters, who drank alcohol, and they all mleccha habits, but they believed in God, and they got married and stayed married. And there was no divorce, right? Right? Is that right?
Well, I don't know, before the
50s or something. Yeah, once the consumer society came in, and then the personal enjoyment becomes more important than social responsibility. And personal enjoyment, and religion is a check on that. because religions tell you to behave yourself. And personal enjoyment means, and personal enjoyment, get ahead, succeed, get ahead. And then the idea that we should work together cooperatively becomes subordinate to, cooperation becomes subordinate to competition, and then it's a complex scenario. But this Prabhupada emphasized so much, Varnashram, we need Varnashram. Stable societies with a clear aim of God consciousness. And there may also be meat eaters and wine drinkers in Varnashram. Yeah, but we're not going to do that now because we have to establish Brahmins first of all. We're not going to advertise it's something desirable, but it has to be allowed because they'll always, if we're going to have widespread Varnashram, then there have to be allowances for people who are not on the highest level of consciousness. But we're a long way from that yet, aren't we? They have to be accommodated. They can take meat and wine according to rules, not in slaughterhouses. Yeah, there's another question? No? All right then. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada had so much hope for these farms. Simply suffering. Family instability means simply suffering. For personal, I don't feel happy in this marriage, therefore cut the marriage. And their kids, well, anyway, what the hell? You know all about that, don't you? So many know all about it. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyas cha kripa sindhubhyas cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nitaya chunakang padayane patyakrit vachaka kushatam etad. Aham bravimi hei sadhava sakala eva bihaya.